Hi, and welcome to 4Panel, the geek show's dedicated comics, manga, and graphic literature podcast. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Mick.
Hello.
And Andrew.
How dare you introduce Mick before me?
I was trying to make sure I didn't make
you
a mess
I'm incredibly vain and self-centered, Rob.
I know, but yeah. I was trying...
That's why I need constant adoration and praise.
Yeah, but Andrew, don't take it to heart. He's having one of those weeks.
Well,
that's true, he is.
I did introduce Graham as Mick on Literary Loitering. That's why I was trying to make
sure. I forgot about that.
Oh, that's an easy tip mistake to make, isn't it? To mistake someone who's a regular on the show for someone who's never appeared on it. Brilliant.
Yeah, excellent. But
in his defense, you two are interchangeable.
I didn't say a thing.
That's a little bit racist, isn't it?
I did not say a thing, okay?
Are you saying that all people with dark hair and glasses just look the same to you?
Well, this is actually incredibly convenient, because accidental racism ties very nicely into our first story.
Ooh!
But I'm going to derail it anyway, because before we start, I just want to mention that we have our very own Twitter page now.
Yes, we do.
We have kind of grown off the back of the Geek Show's Twitter account and sort of plopped off like some weird sentient tumour thing.
A gremlin. We're a gremlin.
Yes, we're a gremlin. Right, now go follow us at 4Panel Podcast, please, because I desperately need the validation.
Yes, just make sure you don't feed us after midnight.
I'm not joking, it's literally all I live for. Please help.
anyway, what's this new story?
Yep. So, remember either last week or the week before when we were all Marvel, we've got a new editor-in-chief, C.B. Cebulski.
Yeah.
And he's probably gonna help lead Marvel out of all the bad times they're having.
Yeah.
Marvel are having another bad time now because he accidentally did some the yellow face back in the... it wasn't even that accidental.
What?
Basically, back in the mid-2000s, Marvel had, and I assume probably still do, have an in-office rule that no editor can work as a writer at the same time.
Okay.
And so to get around that, C.B. Cebulski, he wrote under a pseudonym. Actually, that pseudonym was Akira Yoshida.
Okay.
Because he is a connoisseur of the Japanese arts, shall we say.
Okay.
Massive weeaboo. Yeah, but so obviously he made up this Japanese pseudonym so that he can write basically kind of quite manga-esque stories, kind of lots of superheroes go to Japan, fight some samurais and what such.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I'm wondering, how many harems were in his superhero stories?
Probably a lot, but don't worry, it gets weirder.
What?
I was going to say, because it all seemed quite innocent now, that whole, even the setup, the rule of not being able to write and edit at the same time, that dates back that in the 70s, they had the same rule at the BBC that the script editor of a series couldn't write scripts because of union rules.
Yeah, this is true.
Yeah. But yeah, no, because Akira Yoshida also did some interviews along with his translator.
Wow.
I
think I'm beginning to see the problem.
Yeah. Basically, see, like, it wasn't just, oh, look, I found this manuscript by this random named man. It's, look, I found this manuscript by this randomly named Japanese man who also I've made an intricate backstory for about how he worked in Japanese manga, but ones you haven't heard of, and then emigrated to the US. And I'm definitely not lying, because look, he is a Japanese man. Unfortunately, he doesn't speak English, so I'll just say things for him.
So he got a random Japanese guy and persuaded the Japanese guy just to say some Japanese-sounding words.
I mean, Japanese guy was probably capable of saying words in actual Japanese.
Yeah.
Not to pull a C.B. Cebulski and assume things about another culture.
No, I'm just...
But I think probably quite a few Japanese people speak Japanese.
I know, but I'm just thinking about it from...
Quite fluently as well.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it from the American perspective, you know? From the average American's perspective, they don't really understand Japanese, and so they'll assume that anything that sounds vaguely Japanese is Japanese.
Anyway, do you want it to get even more awkward?
Okay.
Because you know how Marvel like their diversity.
Yeah.
And so, for quite a while, Akira Yoshida was held up as a shining example of, look at Marvel and their diverse hiring policies.
Oh.
Ah.
Yeah.
And that guy who did all that is now what in Marvel?
The editor-in-chief.
For about another week.
If it helps mitigate things a bit, C.B. Sapolsky is also responsible for bringing in quite a few actual Asian people to work for Marvel.
It doesn't really help.
No, this is a bit of a bad racist.
I mean, that's like, you know, the cop who goes out and beats loads of African-Americans, but his partner just happens to be African-American, so it's okay.
Yeah, it does smack a bit.
Basically living the plot of the James Caan film Alienation.
It is, basically, isn't it? Oh, that's...
Definitely a point in that film where one of the characters said, this is like some kind of alienation, and then like looked at Caan. I might just be misremembering this, like to try and hide away from the, oh no, it's very awkward and bad C.B. Sapolsky.
Yeah, I know. The irony is the new Netflix, is it a film called Bright, is basically just Alienation.
Oh yeah, but with Will Smith and a man in troll makeup.
Yeah, Will Smith, a man in troll makeup, and a wand, a magic wand, which apparently is the magical equivalent of a nuclear warhead.
I didn't know they started putting those kinds of movies on Netflix.
Yeah.
No. I'll have to cancel my discreet website subscriptions.
Oh.
I think the big problem with this story is that the official Marvel response has just been a shrug, well, it happened a long time ago, so whatevs. But I think this would be a lot better if C.B. Sapolsky just came out and said, sorry, guys, I didn't mean any like bad intentions by this. I just like Japan a lot.
Yeah.
But I realise now that it has some bad racial overtones, and that's the kind of thing I'm going to try and fix.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, shall we try and turn our head away from Marvel's bad times now?
Yes.
Yeah, let's go to the good times corner.
So yes, Infinity War Part 1 trailer. It's big, the trailer. It's 2.5 minutes big.
It is.
But it's got a lot of stuff to put in. And by that stuff, I mean it has to go, look, is this hero and this hero and this hero, and there's Spider-Man and Iron Man, Doctor Strange and Wong, and also the Hulk and Thor and Loki and Black Panther, and War Machine and Bucky and Captain America, but he's not Captain America because he gave up being Captain America and now he's got a cool beard instead.
Yeah, he's actually the bloke from The Gifted.
Yeah, but he's going to be Captain America again because Black Panther tells someone to get this man a shield.
Yeah, but that, you know, they've given him a shield, but to be Captain America, he's got to have the shield, surely.
Yeah, but can you imagine if the shield he got was a vibranium shield but had a big W on the front? He's like, this doesn't look like my shield. No, it's our shield. You can be Captain Wakanda.
That's actually the Wakandan immigration process.
Yeah.
Here's a shield, you're a citizen now.
Well, it
just does... shoot that at customs, you'll be fine.
Well, he does say engage all defences. It's just like the entire population of Wakanda with shields on the border.
But yeah, it looks great. It looks exciting. It looks big. And if that's the first trailer for it, I just can't imagine what the hype is going to build up like between now and May. I mean, we're still 6 months away, guys.
This is true, we are.
I know.
I hope they don't spoil too much in the trailers, though.
I mean,
yeah.
To be honest, I think some of the teaser stuff we've seen has been more spoilery than this trailer. You know, there was the Comic-Con stuff that got leaked, for example, where you see Thanos calling down a bunch of meteorites or whatever it is. But there was no hint of any of that in this trailer. So the most you've got is Thanos basically knocking out Iron Man and, you know, pinning down Spider-Man.
I'll tell you what this trailer felt like to me. It felt like Marvel saying, hey, we've got this big movie coming out in May next year. And for those of you who've been asleep since Iron Man came out, there's all these other heroes that we've introduced in films in the meantime.
That wasn't this trailer. That was the teaser that came out the day before the trailer, where they had loads of react videos from the internet, from YouTube, cut into, you know, little bits from different movies.
No. That was the trailer, but it smacked of greatest hits.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That
that is the point of the film, that it's, look, here's a threat so big, we've called in everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, except for the Defenders.
Because they're on Netflix.
And they're having a spa day. And the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are holiday time.
What about the Inhumans?
We don't talk about the Inhumans anymore.
But wouldn't that be great if there's a bit, like when Doctor Strange goes, quickly, Iron Man, bring the Inhumans, and they both just burst out laughing.
It's a goal from Black Bolt, and it just cuts to Black Bolt, just really frustrated at the other end of the phone.
As we just sort of like sign into the receiver.
What if Black Bolt wants to call someone? It would be really creepy, because you'd just get like Black Bolt's heavy breathing at the end, but no one talking.
Then no, you wouldn't, because surely his heavy breathing would like obliterate the phone.
Oh, true, yeah. True.
You know, a slight gasp can level a police car, so you know.
Why don't the Inhumans just invent texting?
Maybe they did.
Yeah.
Maybe when Black Bolt, maybe Black Bolt has like, you know, the little, Black Bolt's blackboard, so he can write things on it.
Or maybe he's like Machete. Black Bolt, don't text.
Possibly.
Like, he just likes really being really awkward about it.
But yes, having seen the trailer, I'm stoked.
Yeah, I've got to admit, I was impressed with just this.
I think I might even be almost at original Avengers movie levels of hyped.
Yeah, I mean, it does have that going for it. When they said Infinity War, I was just imagining basically everyone versus Thanos, but they are actually playing it out to be an actual war, you know, on a much bigger scale than what happened in Avengers as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing on, like, another level. It's another one of those films where kind of everyone's thinking a bit, oh, surely, that's too many characters in one film. You can't pull this off. And then they just come out and say, oh, can't we?
Yeah, I actually agree with you on that one. I think that's it. The thing is, they've built everything up and they've built up the characters themselves. So going into this movie, if you're not familiar with one of the characters, then you've obviously missed a film somewhere.
Yeah.
Plus, I guess this is also coming off Spider-Man Homecoming, then Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
And Black Panther as well, which looks awesome. So.
Oh, God, yes.
It's a good time to be a Marvel fan again.
Yeah.
Oh, unless you're a Japanese Marvel fan.
No, even if you're a Japanese Marvel fan, it's a good time. It's if you're an American playing a Japanese Marvel fan. Let's be specific here.
Diverse. They have white guys. They've got white guys pretending to be other ethnicities.
Maybe that's the big reveal in the Black Panther movie.
Oh, that was bad.
Actually, I think there's like a parody comic that Marvel did like years and years ago, but just Black Panther pulls off his hood to reveal he's actually a white guy.
Oh.
Captain America's just, you can't call yourself Black Panther and be white. And then Black Widow's just standing behind him like, so? Like Black Knight comes in as well.
Actually, that's a good point. It does raise a valid point.
I can't wait for 2018's Black Panther movie starring Ryan Gosling.
Oh, not Ryan Gosling.
God, but what if it was Ryan Gosling, but also doing Chadwick Boseman's accent?
Oh, no. That's like that stupid, what do they call them? You know, those shock comedy things that America is, that Hollywood has been churning out since American Pie.
Oh, the something movies.
It's not a movie. It's basically along the American Pie route.
I mean, like scary movie.
Yeah.
Superhero movie. That kind of drivel.
Yeah. Ryan Gosling doing the accent would be like the trailer I saw for one of those movies starring John Cena, as in the wrestler John Cena.
That knows who John Cena is.
Yeah, but I'm assuming that you guys don't watch wrestling since... Andrew, you have told me.
John Cena is a meme. Rob.
Is he?
He's a meme. That's why he's in the film.
Okay.
Not only that, but we're not aware of any other John Cenas. It's not like the internet is awash with lots of John Cenas.
But it might be, since apparently you can't see them.
Stop it, Rob. You're doing memes.
I know I am. Do we have something else?
Yes, we do. Because that was my job, to say the things. We're moving on to our newest and best segment, which called, I forget, but I gave it a long, convoluted name.
That's an odd name for this segment.
There's a superhero thing on at the movies, at the television, and now we're going to talk about it. That's its name. That's right. Its name forever, except also this is going to be like the last one before we go on break for Christmas, and I will absolutely have forgotten about it by then.
True.
Okay.
Hey, so that Punisher TV series is pretty good. Please talk about that so that I can stop saying things.
It's brutal, isn't it?
Oh, God, yes. It's so wonderfully brutal that you just sit there going, my God, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah, it's one of those. I remember when The Walking Dead TV show was on, which is not something that I watch myself, but I know a lot of people who were fans of the graphic novel.
Yeah,
who started watching the show, and in the lead up to certain scene, they were going, they can't possibly do the baby thing. They can't possibly do the baby thing. They can't possibly. Oh my God, they did the baby thing. And Punisher's a bit like that. Sorry?
I distinctly remember babies not getting shot to death on The Walking Dead.
Well, I, as I say, I don't watch it, so I'm only going on what I heard from other people who do.
Yeah.
But whether it was a diluted version or not, I don't know, but I think the idea of just the baby being involved at all shocked them, let alone anything else. And I think the same is true with The Punisher on Netflix. I think, you know, the character that we...
Point out, The Punisher at no point kills a baby.
Yes.
Kills lots of things, but not a baby.
That's true. But I think people who've enjoyed The Punisher in the comics may have a look at previous attempts to bring the character to the screen.
Yeah.
And think, yeah. Oh, they're all a bit weak and watery compared to what you see in the comics.
I've got to say...
And they may shy away from a TV series. I mean, if you can't do it in a movie...
Yeah, this is true.
But all those fears were washed away in a sea of blood.
And so much. And bullet casings and mirrors.
And on one or two occasions, bits of skull.
Yes. Lots of delightful explosions. Oh, God, yes, yeah. The sledgehammer. I forgot about that.
How could you forget the sledgehammer?
I was distracted by the mirrors.
But the sledgehammer is episode one, and it's a filthy tease.
Yeah, I know.
You see Frank, and he's knocking down a wall with a sledgehammer.
Can I just go back to the point where Rob was distracted by mirrors? What are you, part budgie?
No, the mirror's in the last episode. I'm not saying anything other than that.
Right, I'm still struggling to see how mirrors in the last episode distract you from a sledgehammer in the first episode. Unless you're watching it on, like, multiple screens at once and you've got a different screen for every episode.
Well, I'm not watching it right now. I was just thinking of the mirrors in the last episode and what happened with the mirrors in the last episode.
Look, Rob has a special brain, Mick.
Yes. Yes, he does.
Yes, and you've been taught by your parents not to pick on special children.
It's okay. It plays all the right scenes, just not necessarily in the right order.
Anyway, sledgehammers.
Yeah, I don't remember the point I was making. Frank Castle beats some people to death with a sledgehammer, and it's the best.
It is.
Except also maybe the bit where, like, he pushes a guy's eyes right to his head.
Although I do feel it was lacking a sign at the beginning saying, kids, don't try this at home.
Really? I think if you've got parents who are letting you watch this, kids... Then maybe
you have really cool parents. Well done.
Or really bad parents. There's a bit of a grey area in between there. So,
but yes, Punisher. It's good, it's brutal, and if you're age appropriate, watch it.
I've got to say, have you guys read any of the Punisher comics?
Not for a while.
Andrew?
I mean, yeah. There have been quite a few, and I have read certainly some of them.
Okay, did you read any of the Garth Ennis stuff?
Actually, no, that is one of those things I really do need to read at some point.
Because I was getting some really strong kind of Garth Ennis-y overtones from the series.
For that is like one of the main Punisher comics, so I assume it was probably quite influential.
Because when Microchip says, "Welcome back, Frank."
Wait a minute, Rob. Are you saying that was maybe some kind of reference to the famous Punisher story, "Welcome back, Frank"?
Well, yes.
That's my mind blown. I certainly didn't make that connection. It's okay, guys. Four panels, done it again.
It's not really
conspiracy.
Enough with the sarcasm, mister.
Never enough with the sarcasm.
No, all I'm saying is,
that's all we've got. If I stop being sarcastic, people realise we don't know what we're talking about.
That's no. Like taking away Spider-Man's web shooters.
We don't take them all away. They ain't qualifying that with anymore.
And that's rain, which we do wish someone will take away.
Yeah. Anyway, what was I saying? I'm distracted by web shooters. The Garth Ennis stuff. I was that Welcome Back, Frank was an obvious kind of nod to a story, but I'm talking about like the tone of the series was it felt more like a Garth Ennis type story, even without that reference.
It did feel. I'll tell you what else it reminded me of. It reminded me of the TV adaptation of Preacher as well.
Yeah.
Which has also got the Garth Ennis link, obviously.
Yeah, this is true. Speaking of the tone, what they did that I liked a lot was they did a really good balance of saying, like, this is the Punisher, watch him do cool Punisher stuff with guns and explosions, but also that this is the Punisher, he is a bad man and you shouldn't root for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he does what he does because he is severely psychologically damaged.
And look at how even his best friends are scared of him.
That is absolutely like... love the friendship between Frank and Quill.
Yeah, we're friends with him, but we don't actually like him very much or entirely trust him, and we're a little bit frightened.
Also, don't tell him we said any of this because he might shoot us in the face.
Yeah, basically. So, yeah. It's nice when something actually lives up to the hype, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a remarkable return to form for Netflix Marvel shows after Iron Fist.
Yeah, I think Iron Fist, and to a lesser extent, Defenders, which was kind of just okay.
Kind of went nowhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't like the way the story played out with Sigourney Weaver's character.
No.
Yeah, certainly, not to spoil too much, but the end of that series definitely wasted some very good characters.
Yeah. You know, there was scope for actually doing something much better, but I think they just kind of fumbled it at the end. Or maybe they put all their attention, all their energy into Punisher, in making Punisher good, and they didn't have any energy to spare for anything else.
Which is weird, because Defenders was supposed to be like their big tentpole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But whatever, who cares, because Punisher's fantastic.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all fine. You know,
I think a lot of that is thanks to John Bernthal.
Who was basically born to play the Punisher.
Yeah, well, I think I've said it before, that John Bernthal basically looks like Frank Castle just started pushing his face against a comic panel.
Yeah.
Until it bursts through the other side.
I believe it. It also helps that he's a very good actor as well.
Oh, yeah. He does not just look the part.
Yeah. And his voice as well. His voice is just so full of menace. Whenever he's just being, you know, talking seriously... He just gives shivers.
In fact, it took me quite a while to realise.
What?
John Bernthal's actually fairly short compared to everyone else. But he's one of those guys that just kind of fills a room.
Yep.
Yeah, mainly with bodies.
And bullets.
Yeah, let's not forget the bullet casings.
Yeah, there are an awful lot of those. The scrap value on those alone would be immense.
Is everyone just thinking back to The Punisher, to their favourite scenes now?
It's basically just a sea of red in my brain right now.
It is, yeah. It's like they thought, what's the tone of this series? And then they looked at the James Bond titles where he walks across through the barrel of a gun and it just drips red.
Yeah.
They sort of took the final frame of that and go, that's the tone. That's the one we want.
Yeah. Do you know what I did like? I like the way that it just kind of, they were vague references to the other Netflix Marvel shows, and it didn't really mention anything about the main MCU. It just kind of kept that off to one side, and that was it.
Yeah,
it was its own thing.
Your only real link to the other shows is Karen Page being in it.
Yeah, which I think that definitely works better for the Punisher than the other superheroes.
Yeah.
He's very much a, I'm just going to go off and do my own thing kind of guy.
Yeah, and I think that works better So I like the fact that they didn't try and, you know, kind of tie it into anything else.
Yeah, I also like the fact that they just flat out didn't mention things.
Yeah.
Instead of being all, ooh, it's been 5 years since the incident.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Do you remember that big green guy? just call him the Hulk or don't mention him.
Yeah.
We all know it's the Hulk. We're not sitting at home going, big green guy, wait a minute.
They're on about the
Captain America.
No, they're talking about the Savage Dragon.
What if everyone in the MCU was just a big Savage Dragon fan?
Yeah. Except for Hulk, who thinks they're all a fan of him. But it turns out when he finds out they're not, he just leaves the planet and goes to whatever Planet Hulk is, where everybody's his fan.
And that's how we lead up to the MCU's next big event, World War Hulk.
Yeah. It might be the case, we don't know. But the other thing I liked is how they're basically playing for the second season, but they didn't really, you know, they set it up really nicely, the second season, I thought.
Yeah.
I think they did, but they also kind of ended in a way where if this was just a one and done, I'd be fairly happy with that.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Yeah. No one's going to be disappointed with the storyline.
No.
Ending where it does.
No.
Your disappointment, if there isn't a season two, is that there isn't more Punisher, not that there's no tie-up on particular threads in that story.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately might be likely because it's all up in the air with Marvel.
Yeah,
it is. Not being with Netflix anymore.
I mean, was it the second episode where they had that scene where the room was just pitch black and everyone's shooting everyone, and then the light comes on and there's just one guy left with a gun?
I think that might be the first episode, because that's when he just hangs out at a drug bust.
Was that the first episode or the second episode? It was very, very early on. And he's just stood there behind him. He just takes a gun and shoots him in the head very casually. That's one of my favourite scenes, because it's just like everyone shooting at everyone else in a blind panic.
Also, you know what I think the show did a lot better than any other Marvel show?
What's that?
It's actually keeping the pace consistent for all 13 episodes.
Yes!
Yeah, there were no
building and building.
Yeah, there were no real drag episodes or padding, was there?
Yeah, because it seems like every other show around episode 10, it's the hero going, okay, we've done the thing that we wanted to do at the start of the series, but now circumstances have conspired that we have to do it again. Like, it's Jessica Jones. Yay, I've caught the purple man, but oh, he's got away. I'm going to have to go catch him again.
Yeah.
I never understood that.
I think one of the problems that they've done, the reason that you've got that feel with the first few series is because they're kind of treating the 13 episodes as a movie. So your last sort of three or four are like act three of a movie. So you've had a false victory.
Yeah.
And so now you've got
to have a real one.
They could do with more standalone episodes or maybe kind of 2-3 episode arcs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or just be the Punisher.
Yeah, just be the Punisher.
Actually, when you think about it, the Punisher series kind of worked more like a traditional action series.
Yeah,
because although there was the arc plot, each episode kind of dealt with one element of the plot. Almost like that, rather than it feeling like one big story arc, it was almost like the different elements of the story arc were the monster of the week.
Yeah, actually, you got a good point there.
Yeah, it's kind of like each episode has a mission statement.
Yeah, and ultimately those mission statements combine into one satisfying whole.
Yeah.
And that hole is in the middle of a guy's face where Frank Castle's just beat it and beat it and beat it and beat it and beat it.
The producers
and then got back up, beat it and beat it and beat it and beat it and beat it again.
The producers of Four Panel would like to point out that we do not condone violent activity, unless you're the Punisher.
Or unless it's cool, which it isn't the Punisher.
Sorry, when you said unless it's cool, I'm just thinking, is Craig Charles off at the side giving points for style, control, damage and aggression?
Oh, I preferred it when you were distracted by mirrors.
It's fine, we'll find him for something shiny as we go into the break.
Well, let's go into the break. Find me something shiny. Ooh, shiny thing.
Cartoons, they're not just for kids anymore, except the ones that are actually for kids, they're for kids. If you liked that, then tune in to Keyframe for more scintillating insights about the world of animation. Part of the Geek Show's podcast network, we'll tell you whether it's as good as Ghibli or just plain giblets.
Hi, this is Krillin. And this is Usopp. And you're listening to The Geek Show!
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
Welcome back. And now it's time for comics and things like that. So, Mick, take it away.
Okay, so, you're American. There's a superhero that stands for all you believe in. Their costume consists of stars and stripes. Who are we talking about?
America Chavez.
Fighting American.
No, we're talking about the Shield. Who? I'm reliably informed by the blurb in this, predates Captain America.
What?
I mean, probably. There's lots of very similar superheroes from around that time.
Yeah. So the original Shield ran in Dark Circle Comics, and that's now part of the same group as Archie Comics, don't you know? And it's kind of like a Captain America, but she's female, for a start.
Okay.
And there's also a kind of shadowy, you're not sure whether it's occult or mysticism or aliens or something. There's something not right. There's something uncanny about the Shield because she's born during the War of Revolution or the War of Independence, and then she comes back in modern day America with very few memories of what happened before. The only thing you do know is that she's being hunted down by the same guy that created her back during the War of Independence. And it's really, really good. I really enjoyed it. I would like to read more of The Shield. There's also group, a bit like the Avengers, called The Mighty Crusaders.
All right.
Which features The Fox, The Black Hood, and, which you get a taster for in this collected volume of The Shield, The Hangman. Guess what he does with bad lads?
Does he give them a damn good spanking?
He plays word games with them until they repent.
But Mister, no one deserves punishment like that.
But yeah, so this is written by Adam Christopher and Chuck Wendig, and art is by Drew Johnson, and it's just really vivid. It's nice and violent, so fans of The Punisher may enjoy it. And it's just a nice, she's a vulnerable superhero or superheroine. And there's shady organizations. There's the Burning Hand is one organization. And then obviously the Feds are another shady organization. And it's got everything. It's got action. It's got mysticism. It's got scenes where they're traveling down dark, dank sewer tunnels looking for secret hideouts, daring escapes from helicopters, and flashbacks to the War of Independence. And a heroine who, certainly early doors, doesn't realise the full extent of her powers or her abilities or her history. So she's on a voyage of discovery along with the reader, and it's a really good reinvention. It'd be interesting to see some of the older comics. Yeah, thoroughly recommended read, which is odd because I know when we were dishing out the review material when this one came around, no one really showed any great enthusiasm for it. The art style on the cover does no justice to the art style inside.
Really?
Hmm. That's very stylized. The cover art inside, it's a lot more better is the art. And it mixes up the format as well. It's, you know, like most comics, they take a panel layout and sort of stick with it. This one doesn't. It mixes it up a little bit and has action happening outside of frame, frames overlapping, whole pages becoming a single frame with just huge blocks of text. Sometimes it feels a bit like an illustrated story. So it's nice and varied. So I would recommend that one.
Okay.
Excellent. On to me then.
Indeed.
So I have been reading The Escapists by Brian K. Vaughan, with art by Steve Ralston, Jason Sean Alexander, Philip Bond, and Eduardo Barreto. This, it's got a bit of a backstory. It's basically set in the same universe as a book by Michael Chabon called The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay, which is basically about two comic writers in the 1940s, Jeff Cavalier and Sam Clay, with the idea being that the two were used as a stand-in for, you know, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. It's kind of all those kinds of figures. So this is a sort of sequel slash spin-off, which is about a boy named Max, kind of on the day of his father's funeral, discovering that his dad was secretly a collector of a bunch of old comics of this character called The Escapist, who was created by Cavalier and Clay. And he basically decides he's going to try and revive this character for the modern age, and sets off basically becoming a small-time comic book publisher. You know, it's really interesting.
So this isn't about a superhero then, this is about a comic book publisher?
Yeah, it's basically about a comic within a comic.
Ah, right, okay.
As Max kind of reassembles a team of an artist named Chase and one of his friends called Denny, who's like really into wording. And it's basically about them like trying to get this comic off the ground, basically struggling in an industry where basically you're in trouble if you're not Marvel or DC. It's basically like the real world, but with these fictional comic book characters. Yeah, it's good. It's the kind of thing, especially kind of, it struck a chord with me doing stuff like this, like having similar struggles of desperately trying to like stand out in a world that's very heavily saturated. And kind of the idea that like they're just, their studio is basically Max's house, that he's got some tables in the living room and they're all just like meeting up for coffee and working on pages, and he can barely afford to pay them, so he has to take night classes.
Okay. This feels, the way you describe it, it sounds a bit more like what some of the more traditional manga are like.
Yeah, it is kind of that sort of slice of life.
Yeah.
Being very passionate about something type story.
Yeah.
But it also has a slightly darker tone.
Ooh.
Because basically, try and get the comic off the ground, they decide to stage a publicity stunt in which Denny, being kind of, you know, 6 foot and quite a bit, blonde, muscular, dresses up as the escapist and kind of, well, he starts off going to a local supermarket store with the intention of helping break out some workers who have been like locked inside by their boss. Basically as a, like, you'll stay until the job is done. You don't get any smoke breaks or stuff like that. But things escalate when he accidentally walks into a robbery.
Oh, wow.
And kind of he inadvertently ends up becoming sort of a real life superhero.
Oh, don't you just hate it when that happens?
I know, it's like every single weekend.
I know. There you are, you're just minding your own business, and bang, alien invasion has to be fought off.
Yep, and you do it, but you're accidentally wearing a domino mask, so everyone thinks you're a superhero.
Yeah, it's and an all you're doing is just a guy trying to get the cat his tin of cat food in a busy high street on Black Friday.
Or something like that.
I think Mick's having, you know, flashbacks to the war.
No, I'm having flashbacks to last Friday.
That's what I mean, flashbacks to the war.
The war. Anyway, also I really like what they do with the art in this.
Okay.
Because kind of what they'll do periodically, sort of cut to sort of pages from the Escapist comic. Like it'll start off with kind of the dialogue from that comic book. But then like sort of it'll get overwritten by the characters sort of talking to each other as they're like writing and drawing it.
Okay.
And you know, you get to see kind of how the events of the comic sort of parallel what's going on in the real world, which is a nice effect. And also for being like a talented enough comic writer that he can write authentically kind of a bit cheesy dialogue.
Is this the kind of cheesy dialogue where you can read it without being weirded out by it?
It's good because it's kind of, it's not over the top cheesy. It's like this is written by a guy who is writing his first comic book.
Yes.
Like I think there's a bit where like the villain has the escapist in a death trap and he's all, call me old fashioned, but I like a good old fashioned death trap. None of this putting bullets in people's heads nonsense.
I do feel like I should be reading a bit more Vaughn material because I'm really enjoying the Runaways TV show, which is based on Brian K. Vaughan work.
I really need to read more Vaughan stuff like Runaways, and I think he does East of West as well.
Yeah.
And of course, Saga, like that's the main thing I know him for.
You see, for me, that's just a holiday that I'll be booking very soon.
And while you're doing that, you should bring some Saga along with you.
Yes.
Okay.
But no, don't, Mick, whatever you do, do not read Saga on a boat full of old people. That's not a comic you read around pensioners. Or, like, in any public setting.
Unless you've got everyone's angina medication.
Like, I think the first issue, literally the first panel, is just one of the characters dropping an F-bomb as she gives birth.
Yeah.
Nice.
It literally is. And they all have TVs for heads. Not like flat screens either, the old CRT things.
Okay.
Ah, is it my turn then?
It is your turn. You may as well.
Right, for me, I've got Calder, The Omnibus of Calder, which is written by Paul Tobin with really interesting art by Juan Ferreira. Ferreira. And Calder is a story about, it's kind of a supernatural horror about insanity and about the power of insanity. It's about an inmate in an insane asylum called Declan Thomas. And the things that happen to him and what he does in return for the things that happen to him. It starts off in 1941 in Sansid Asylum in Barnstable, Massachusetts. And there's a fire has started at the asylum. And all of the inmates of the asylum are going, fire, fire, lovely, the Lord has come for me, blah, blah, blah. Everyone's nuts, properly nuts. Except for one guy who kind of walks out the asylum. And nobody really pays attention to him as he's walking because he's just looking straight ahead and walking. That's Declan Thomas. Now spin the story on to present day. And Declan is still going from mental institution to mental institution, but his skin has taken on a blue tinge because somebody appeared on the night of that asylum. That somebody was a character called Nimble Jack. And Nimble Jack is a creature that feeds on certain negative emotions, fear in particular. And Simple Jack, on that night at the asylum, told Declan that he was going to turn colder. And now Declan's body temperature has dropped by so many degrees, he actually feels like he's frozen, but he's still very much alive. Even though he doesn't talk, he doesn't communicate, he doesn't respond to stimuli. He's being looked at the moment in the home of a nurse called Reese, who decided to take him home and look after him for a little bit, just to give him a bit of time from the hospital. Nobody thinks he's going to get any better. Everyone considers him kind of a medical anomaly, right? Nobody knows what's wrong with him. They can't fix him or anything like that. But something happens and Nimble Jack has come back, and he's not the biggest, baddest one, though. Nimble Jack is a bit like Puck in A Midsummer Night's Dream, but he's also kind of... Imagine if Puck and the Joker were joined, you know, had a baby. And then you've got something that's a bit like Nimble Jack. He is totally insane, but he knows how to use the power of insanity to fuel his food. He can feed on it, and he can also use it to open gates to different places. And so what you have is Declan and Reese having to effectively fight for their lives through nightmarish dreamscapes and these worlds that have fallen, all the worlds that are on the verge of falling, all to kind of protect themselves from this Nimble Jack. But not just Nimble Jack, because there's a guy called Swivel as well. See, Nimble Jack feeds on negative emotions, especially fear. Swivel, on the other hand, considers himself a horticulturalist.
Okay.
Except Swivel doesn't grow plants. What he grows are fingers and monsters from fingers. So,
okay.
Yeah. So basically, Calder is this weird, it's surreal, it's difficult to explain because it goes in and out of nightmares, in and out of craziness, in and out of dreamscapes. The fight between Declan and Nimble Jack crosses reality and unreality, and there's so much that goes on that it's a lot to take in, possibly a bit too much. I know this is the omnibus version, and I know it's a graphic novel and you can take your time with it, and I'm actually happy I did, because I do understand it a little bit more than if I just marathoned it. I think with this, you do need to stop every now and then and just take a breath, because it is just so weird and surreal, but it's bloody enjoyable at the same time. It's something that I haven't really seen properly in comic books. Something that I could eminently see as making a TV series, a horror TV series, a proper dyed-in-the-wall horror TV series, or even a couple of horror movies. Because this is a dyed-in-the-wall, you know, down-to-the-bone horror story.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's really good. It's 420 pages. I mean, there is a sketchbook thing at the back, and there is a short story and some patient notes, one of them relating to Declan, in the back of this. And it's 420 pages long. So it's not a small tome. But with that, you'll probably find you marathon it, and you shouldn't. You should force yourself to stop after a little bit and just absorb what you've read. Don't marathon it, even though it's good enough to marathon. So yeah, that's called it.
Okay. Me again now, isn't it?
Yep.
And I bring to thee, loyal Asgardians, Thor, Ragnaroks. That's right, you heard me, Ragnaroks. Plural, three of them.
Is this Thor's best-selling heavy metal album?
It might be.
So what we've got in here is three different stories. Thor, Blood Oath, by Michael Avon Eaming, and art by Scott Collins. Thor Ragnarok, again written by Michael Avon Eaming with Daniel Berman, and the artist is Andrea De Vito. And finally, we have Stormbreaker, the Saga of Beta Ray Bill, again written by Michael Avon Eaming, and again joined by Daniel Berman and Andrea De Vito doing the art. But for all it's called Thor Ragnaroks, and I can't imagine why they'd want to bring out a Thor title with Ragnarok in the title at this moment in time, it's the two Thor stories that are the most disappointing.
Okay.
It's actually the Saga of Beta Ray Bill that's really good.
Yeah.
And really fun. And really exciting.
It's Beta Ray Bill, though. I mean, who doesn't love Beta Ray Bill?
Well, I'd never come across Beta Ray Bill before.
Really?
Yeah. I'd heard of him, but I'd never... You know, I used to read Thor comics back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But they were a weekly thing. He may have appeared, but I don't remember him.
I think he was introduced during the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah. You say...
missing decades.
Yeah. Which are getting ever bigger. But Blood Oath is okay. It's a fairly standard... If you take Thor out of it, it's basically a fairly standard fantasy quest story. It starts off with the Warriors Three being put on trial because they accidentally kill the son of a giant. It wasn't their fault. He was disguised as a whale at the time while they were out hunting. But they're put on trial. But rather than demanding their death, the King of the Giants demands that they go on a quest to bring back three magical items from other realms. And of course, the path to get these magical items, or the path back from getting these magical items, is bound to cause someone's death anyway. So it's kind of a sentence to death, but if by some miracle they survive, they get some magical weapons.
Okay.
It's a little bit, meh. You know, there's so many fantasy tropes in there, it's unbelievable. Possibly the most interesting quest that they go on is for the Celtic Spear, the Spear of Culan, where they have to travel to modern-day Ireland and visit the land of the leprechauns and the Celtic kings. That's probably the most exciting story in the quest, but there's a lot of Blood Oath, and towards the end it starts to feel like a chore. Getting to the end of it.
So was that in fact then, your magical journey that you had to go on as punishment?
Yes. Thor accompanies the Warriors Three, but has to take a blood oath that he won't use his hammer in combat. but he can still use all its other abilities, like for travel, etc. But he just can't use it to fight anybody. And it, you know, there's a twist in there, but it's a twist that you can kind of see coming. Ragnarok is an improvement. It's a bit more of an action story and is more closely linked to what we understand as Ragnarok, you know, a massive fight for the future of Asgard. So massive a fight, in fact, that Thor has to call on his good buddies, the Avengers, to help out.
Yeah.
And it also serves as a little bit of a precursor to the saga of Beta Ray Bill, because some of the events in Ragnarok cross over with the saga of Beta Ray Bill.
All right.
But yeah, and there's some nice sort of little nods to the past of Marvel. There's one panel in particular where there's a very old school Thor, and you know the sort of 50s original Iron Man?
Yeah.
That looks like a sort of golden sex toy of some description.
Yeah, another one.
Yeah. So there's a nod to that, and there's a picture of Ant-Man and the Wasp with those. And like I say, it's a more exciting thing. It kind of weakens the threat of Ragnarok in the end, but I don't want to give too much away as to how it does that, but it does. And, you know, in over the course of the three Thor movies, they've moved away from that kind of archaic language that Thor uses.
Oh, the yeas and verilies.
Yeah, that's still in here, and it makes it a little bit of a chore to read.
Ooh, that's not good.
Yeah, I think, I don't think I mentioned it, but that was kind of a problem I had when I did that Thor thing a while ago.
Yeah.
Especially with, like, the 70s stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Stormbreaker, the saga of Beta Ray Bill, is, it's almost like Beta Ray Bill's undergoing his own Ragnarok with his own people. And, you know, what comic isn't made better by the introduction of Galactus?
Okay.
So there's that to look forward to. And again, like I say, it's almost like, as a sort of Thor clone, Beta Ray Bill gets his own Ragnarok, where his people are the Asgardians. They've got similar factions. You know, there's an equivalent to Loki. There's an equivalent to Odin. And it's a much better story because you haven't got all of these thous and dusts. Well, not until Beta Ray Bill flashes back to Asgard. But that's only a couple of pages throughout the entire story. We've got another sort of mystical villain similar to Hela from the Thor stories called Astaroth.
Astaroth is a demon's name, is it?
Yeah, there's stars being destroyed, planets being wiped out, you know, all that good run-of-the-mill everyday stuff that just happens on a normal day when you're out and about fighting with space wolves and being captured by Spider-Man. You know, what's not to love about it? But yeah, of the three stories, that's by far and away the best. I was the editor, I'd have called it the saga of Beta Ray Bill with some Thor stuff thrown in.
Okay, but now I'm going to ruin Beta Ray Bill for you.
Oh, no.
Because I had my suspicions, and Marvel Database has confirmed them. Do you know his home planet's called?
What?
Corbin. And its inhabitants are the Corbinites.
Oh, actually, yes, that is mentioned right at the beginning.
But Beta Ray Bill is a staunch Labour supporter.
Yes, and why wouldn't he be? let me just check. Yes, the planet New Corbin.
Oh, so this is after he had a bit of a makeover.
Well, yeah, I mean, his race is Corbinite, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think they all live in his beard. Yeah. Inside his little, like, hemp satchel thingy-mabob.
Although, to be fair, Beta Ray Bill himself isn't a Corbinite. He was made by the Corbinites.
I mean, to be fair, so was Jeremy Corbyn, in a sense.
And you also get to meet, because, let's face it, we all know what Beta Ray Bill means, don't we? There was an Alpha Ray Bill.
Yeah, he was in that comedy about superheroes with Ben Stiller. Was it Zoolander? He was in Zoolander.
Not Alpha Ray Bill. I bet he goes to bars and insults women into trying to get them to sleep with him.
No, he just goes mental.
Oh, I see. and makes YouTube videos about how feminism is the real problem with the modern world.
No, it just becomes a mental...
No, I'm making cutting-edge political humour about alphas and betas. This is important show content. But also, oh god, I need to go off in like 20 minutes. I've been reading Bloodstone and the Legion of Monsters. It's all right. But see, what it is a basically a bunch of different stories kind of collected together. So the first and best one is the Legion of Monsters miniseries they did a while ago, which is by Dennis Hopeless with art by Wando. And it's cool. It's basically so it's a bunch of all the old Marvel monsters, like Manfibian and the Living Mummy and Werewolf by Night. And also Morbius, the Living Vampire.
All right.
They've set up their own city sort of in the sewers underneath all the cities of the world. But there's mysterious mysteries going on. There's a virus sweeping through the city, kind of making monsters go rabid and they have to be put down. So kind of Elsa Bloodstone chases one of these monsters back to the Monster City. And she has to team up with the kind of monsters, what I said before, to work out what the heck is going on. And it's great, because it's basically like a police procedural drama, but with a character called Manfibian, who is a fish man.
See, do you know what bugs me about this, Mick, right? Remember when we were talking about Manimal?
Yes.
Manimal is nothing compared to Manfibian.
Do you remember how much they were taking the mickey out of us for...
Yeah.
For it, and now Andrew is now saying that Manfibian is the greatest thing ever.
Hey, in my defense, Manfibian is not made out of terrible 80s special effects.
But he would have been, had it been made in the 80s, on telly.
But also he wasn't, so let's move on.
And besides which, actually, I need to pick Rob up on a point, because Andrew didn't actually say it was the best thing ever. He said, it's all right.
Yeah. No, he said the graphic novel was all right.
Yeah, Manfibian is great, as are the rest of the Legion of Monsters. But then it's kind of, it's the other stuff that isn't as good. Like, there's kind of a few kind of short Elsa Bloodstone stories. There's one which kind of just introduces who the character is. Then there's a couple of kind of fun ones of just like Elsa and Boom Boom from the Next Wave series, just kind of hanging out, talking. Like, they chat about boys while hunting a Frankenstein.
As you do.
And then discuss like whether or not they should just become supervillains instead.
Okay.
So that's all fun. But unfortunately, then we get onto like what the bulk of this graphic novel is, which is the old Ulysses Bloodstone series from the 70s.
Ah.
And it is sure a comic book from the 70s.
Is it that bad?
It's so overwritten.
Oh, God.
Like, what's the passage? I've got the bookmark in. Yeah, it's like, he moves with animal precision, but there is an all-too-human passion, perhaps just a taint of cruelty in his eyes.
What?
Which he'd hope just... the artist would be able to convey.
Well, no, because his eyes are two black splodges. But yeah, it's just pointless narration, hammy dialogue, but then also, like, weird stuff. Like, turns out the Bloodstone is actually like a psychic alien from beyond time and space, and it wants to send its servant, who is like an octopus man in a diaper, to kill Bloodstone, but then they fight within the crystal, and this third eye opens, and weird stuff happens.
It sounds it as well. And
also, there's a man with a flute who summons a monster. Then when Bloodstone tries to stop him, he just hits him in the head with the flute.
Yeah, but I just want to point out, Andrew is a man who loves anything to do with, well, loves the majority of things to do with Cthulhu. And he's calling this story where he has to fight some octopus in a diaper weird.
In fairness, I don't recall any stories of H.P. Lovecraft where the old ones appear wearing diapers.
I mean, I think the thing about Lovecraft is he says stuff like, this weird thing happened, and it was weird.
Yeah.
But this is all just, yeah, some weird stuff happens, go with it, accept it. But we've got to fight inside the crystal now. Bloodstone is on the astral realm, he's talking to a space crystal. But let's not dwell on that, let's move on to the next scene.
Yeah.
That being said, it does have one character who I kind of love.
Oh.
This bad guy called Killer Shrike. And just, I love the fact that he is the most undeservedly confident supervillain I've ever seen. He watches you take down monsters the size of a city block, and then he just says, nah, I can take him. I can fly. I've got wrist plates, I can shoot some laser beams. I definitely stand a chance. And no, he doesn't, bless him.
See, I like those kinds of supervillains, because...
I like the optimism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got no time for those pessimistic supervillains. Optimistic supervillains all the way. I think that's one of the reasons why the Joker is so beloved, because he is so optimistic, isn't he?
Exactly. The Joker is the kind of guy who never lets a beating get him down.
Exactly.
Indeed.
He's an inspiration to all of us. If someone gets in the way of your dreams, you just murder an asylum guard, break out, and take another crack at it.
Yeah.
And one day you will poison that water supply with Joker venom.
The thing is, the Joker's goals, his ambitions weren't that big. He didn't want to rule the world. He didn't want to destroy the world. He just, you know, wanted Batman to admit that Batman was just as crazy as he was.
He just wants to kill some people, Batman. Can't you find it in your heart to just let that scamp have his way?
Well, no, he didn't.
You have a dream, Batman?
He didn't want to kill people. That was just an offshoot of his frustration at Batman not admitting that Batman was crazy.
I also feel like maybe he killed some people because he loves him some killing people.
Possibly he did. I don't know. I don't know him that well.
You say possibly, I say definitely, because he is a crazy clown man who spends his free time devising ways to make laughing sharks that eat Batman.
Yeah.
Sorry, is that the new movie that's going to take off from Sharknado? It's going to be like Sharkinas. Sharks and hyenas tied together.
Still better than Suicide Squad.
You see, you do realise there's a studio exec at Sci-Fi Channel now, right now, getting a scriptwriter for that movie.
You get a scriptwriter for that movie, I want royalties because it's my blood.
Too late, mate. You signed him away.
I haven't said
that's
anything.
That's a shame on that. And on that note, we're definitely ending the show because I need to go out in like 10 minutes. Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter and stuff. You know the drill.
Yeah. What he said. We'll see you all next week.
Bye now.